Justin, we have an incredible announcement for the people. Tell them.
Big announcement coming. Austin, Texas, this November, the second Intentional Fatherhood Retreat. We are pumped. What dates, Brooke?
November 12th through the 14th, you can join us in Austin, Texas for a weekend to get away and to be refreshed and transformed as a father. Tell the people what they can expect, Justin.
We're going to have incredible worship. We're going to have great teaching. We're going to have a community of dads all coming together, not just to hear a biblical framework on how to live intentionally as a father, but also to be equipped with tons of practical habits and help on how to do that. Most of all, though, this is the kind of thing where you come into a community of dads who are all trying to follow Jesus into fatherhood together. And let me tell you guys, this will change your life. So we want you there.
Come out, go get your tickets at intentionalfatherhood.org. You can get all of your tickets there. And please, again, join us. Austin, Texas, November 12th through the 14th. Can't wait to see you there.
Welcome to the Intentional Fatherhood Podcast, where we explore what it means to live on purpose as a father and how legacy starts at home. I'm Justin Whitmore Early.
And I'm Brooke Moser. We'll be your hosts, and we desire to bring biblical hope and practical help. Thanks for listening. Well, welcome back to the Intentional Fatherhood Podcast. Today, a voice that's different, but no less amazing. We have Fatherhood in the Wild, our second guest ever, a dear friend of mine and somebody who I am so excited to introduce you to. It's not Justin, although he is legit. Fred Odom, welcome to the Intentional Fatherhood Podcast.
Oh, Brooke, man, thank you for having me. I told you before we started recording, man, it's surreal to be here. Like, it was, a year and a half ago you all launched this, and I was listening to you and Justin's voice in my ear, which isn't as weird as that sounds, while I was out running. And now,
we were all together whispering in your ears while you were running.
That's it, while I was on the run. And man, to listen to that, think in my head, man, I feel like I could be friends with them, like in real life. And then to now be sitting with you a year and a half later, bro, it's surreal, man. It's an honor to be here.
Well, it's funny because that's the truth, man. You have become a real friend, and that's just, you know, I think I'm the blessed one by that in many ways. And, you know, I think it's one of the reasons I love talking about getting into what you feel passionate about and jumping into the world is because you just never know who you get to link arms with and lock in with and who God will bring into your life. And Fred, you're no exception to that. So what a gift it is. And honestly, today is a fun conversation because I think I said this already, but you very much fit the stage of life that I think a lot of guys, families in general, fall into that are, you know, whether it's our events or the podcasts that are kind of overlapping with a lot of this content. And as you and I have been processing through 2 minutes, 4 minute, and now 8 minute long voice memos, which is a new feat for us.
That's a new record for me. You started there. I'm like just now catching up.
You're already at the 8 minute mark. I'd love for you to just intro us really quick. Obviously, life, family, a little bit of what you do so people can have some context to the legend of Fred that they don't even know they're going to meet right now.
Oh man, legend is an overstatement, but I will give you the like kind of big bucket. So Fred Odom, married to my wife, Becca Odom. She took my last name, thankfully, so that's cool. Becca Odom. We've been married for, 10. We just celebrated 10 years on May 14th. We're in interracial marriage, which maybe we'll touch on some of that later. And God's given us 3 daughters. So we have Charlie, Chapel, and Chloe. A fun fact about them, Charlie, 5 years old. So my last name, Odom, her first name, Charlie. So her middle name is Elizabeth. So her initials are CEO. And then for Chapel, her name is Chapel Faye Odom, so CFO. And then Chloe, CJO. She's like our chief joy officer, chief judicial officer, depending on like how she's feeling that day. So that's our dynamic, man. That's our C-suite. Fatherhood is, the past 5 years of becoming a dad have been hard, a gift, encouraging, challenging, all the stuff we're probably going to talk about, but that's the home front. A fun fact, we live in the same neighborhood as my in-laws, which they asked us before they moved into the neighborhood, like, would y'all be okay with this? And I think society would have told me to say, no, I'm not good with it, but praise God that he was like, you know, I think you should say yes. I said, yes, it's been such a gift. For the work side of things, I work for Chick-fil-A at our support center office in Atlanta, Georgia. Hopefully people who are listening are fans of Chick-fil-A, love to go visit their local restaurants. Oh, yeah. And man, I've been at Chick-fil-A for 8 years now, and my job, so I work on these two annual conferences our company puts on. One of them is more leadership based, which you and Intentional have gotten to be at. The other one's a little more business based that happens in the fall. And man, my role is everything from like getting to work on the theme for it, the content strategy for it, figuring out what the messaging is going to be, working with speakers to get their talks together. And yeah, my job's a lot of words and helping people show up on stages and stuff like that. So it's a lot of fun.
Well, truth be told, that is where we first overlapped, and what a gift it was to meet. We're on a call and man, could not, I mean, at the moment, and I mean, you'll hear this throughout this episode, but the moment I remember we jumped on the call, cause we were covering content, which you're so helpful with, like threading the needle of what the hope and the content of these, you know, you're kind of underselling what you do. These events are massive and these speakers are massive. And the people that do these are like just top world leaders of, and so you're not just talking about like trying to craft what Chick-fil-A is hoping to message. You're doing that with people who are really gifted in that space and also probably have strong opinions about what they want to say. And so nuancing those two and trying to be like, here's what we're trying to hit and here's what you're trying, here's your message and here's how they overlap. It is no small feat. And I know that's where we had that overlap. And man, that moment, I remember I was like, something different about Fred, man. He's just there's something in his life and on his life. And ever since, it's been fun to get to know you and overlap and just see all that you get to do. And so just to say, I got to experience the work side of you at first, and man, so gifted, like in the level of communication.
Thank you, bro.
Understanding of words, I think that's something that you are so good at and something that you've obviously learned a ton, but I think obviously are still learning and still growing and wanting to help people. And man, I just love that you're getting to do this in this space. And so, I love that overlap. It was a fun time when we had that call. And then I think it was, how did it move from like, hey, we're doing some business stuff to like chatting? What happened?
Oh, bro, I just sent you.
Oh, I remember this.
I was like, man, this has nothing to do with Chick-fil-A, but I just feel like a connection to you as a person and feel like, man, the Lord may have like laid something on your heart to share with me. And so I reached out and you were like, no, don't have anything specific for you. And I was like, oh, well, that's all right. Which I appreciate the honesty.
Man, I didn't know it was that much of a deep. I'm sorry, dude.
But like we wound up going to some cool places. And I think the real gift of it though, Brooke, and man, I go back to like first listening to the episode of Intentional Fatherhood, season 1, episode 1.
Yeah.
Man, what you and Justin gave me the gift of is feeling like I'm not crazy. Like the stuff, the hard stuff that I was processing of work and fatherhood and being a husband and managing all of this and following Jesus, like it can be easy to think you're alone in that or like who really understands what all I'm carrying. And you all give voice to that and gave voice to that. And so, yeah, man, I think that's part of why we became fast friends is I felt like even from a year and a half ago, oh shoot, he gets me and he gets what's going on.
Oh dude. Well, that's very kind. Thank you. I couldn't remember. I remember when you started saying that. Yeah. I don't remember that detail. I was like, no, I don't got anything.
Nope, it was real clear. Nothing. Give me nothing specific.
Well, clarity is kindness, Fred. You got to remember that is clarity is kindness to people.
Brooke,
so
you're one of the kindest people I know.
Touche. I take it. I receive it. But Fred, you are in the middle of, you're 33. I reminded you before the call, Jesus didn't make it past 33. So I do hope for a strong year for you. You know what I'm saying?
Thanks for that.
Yeah, you're welcome. But you know, I haven't heard you refer to the girls as C-suite, but that is brilliant. I love that. Dude, walk me a little bit on the journey of what fatherhood looks like right now for you. And what I'm trying to get at isn't anything specific other than what's on your heart, because in, I think, the natural struggle of where you're at, and I know where I'm at even right now in the different complexities of my kids are just a little bit older. And there's complexities on all those levels, but I would love to just hear from you as someone that's in the same boat. You know, we're in the same boat. Mm-hmm. And I think it's important to highlight that Justin and I, Fred, others, we're in the same boat. It's the same boat phenomenon. We don't have it all figured out, but there are some things that we've tried and have been helpful and hope to pass those along. But as we're in the same boat, what are some of the things you're experiencing and even learning that's brought on purpose as a father right now?
Oh man, I feel like the last episode you all did around like work-life balance and the myth of that puts just such a helpful covering over the season that I'm in where, man, on the work side of things, man, I'm being entrusted to lead at a higher level than I've ever led before, to like in some ways lead individuals that are above me in the organization and like help equip them and help them grow and figure out the message they need to communicate. Man, I'm being entrusted to guide more of the strategy for our events and look longer term. And man, so I'm really grateful for all that. But what it's come with is a different level of pressure, which I don't think is bad. But man, it's funny. I was talking with a buddy recently. We were like, man, I think everybody wants the title of leadership, but not the weight of stewardship. And like, I got like the title side of it now. Like I'm doing a little bit more, but man, the weight came with it. Like the bar is a little heavier. And so it's requiring me to like show up in a different way of work, be more prepared, all those things. But man, with that at home, we've got a 5-year-old, a 3-year-old, and an almost 1-year-old. And man, part of my background is like my parents divorced when I was 3 years old. And man, thankfully I have really good relationships with both of them, but that created a lot of back and forth. And obviously, man, like me and Becca thriving and having a marriage that lasts is really, really important to me. Me being a father who's present for my daughters and shows them what it looks like to be a man and what I hope they find in a husband one day is really important to me. And Brooke, I've become so aware of my desperate need for Jesus to bring both of those in. Like on the work front, man, I'm praying more than I ever have. Because I see like, oh, I actually can't carry this apart from you. Yes. Even if I could, I wouldn't want to. And man, then on the home side, it's not even just I could without you. It's like, no, Jesus, I literally can't do this without you. Like I can't show up as the husband I want to show up as without you. I can't show up as the father I want to show up as without you. And so man, there's that stuff. But then Brooke, there's also this dynamic of what I spoke with you about on Father's Day, where we ended the night, I'm laying next to Becca before bed. And she looks at me and she's like, thank you for being a great dad. And man, I just couldn't receive it. Because what I know of me is that night putting our middle daughter to bed, I'm angry, I'm frustrated. I probably snapped at her a little bit too hard. And so it's like, okay, God, how do I hold this tension of my wife saying this about me and what I'm thinking about me? But maybe what she's saying about me is closer to how you see me. And then like Brooke sends me a voice message the next morning that's like, man, I just want to tell you you're a wonderful dad. And it's like, oh shoot. Well, like, what if my opinion about me isn't actually the most important? And so like even that started to inform my fatherhood and my work life and all that. So man, I don't know if this is answering your question directly, but this is some of the stuff that's like actively top of mind for me.
Yeah. No, I mean, I this is exactly what I'm asking. I think it's the tension that you just highlighted, I think is so felt that, and we don't usually have a framework for this, that we can both be in process and not perfect and still working through all the stuff. And at the same time, you know, messy, and at the same time, actually be good and helpful and loving and creating connection and being a safe place for our kids. And I'm with you. Like that tension is always something I can't fully understand because I see it and hold it just like you do. I see all my failures. I see all the things I want to grow in. I see all the moments of dropping the ball. And man, I cannot agree with you more that tension and just naming it and going like, I think every father, especially listening, is going like, I can like, yeah, okay, me too. Like I'm in that space of like feeling it. And so I think maybe to sum up even that little part of what you just said, the tension of not being arrived or having arrived yet is a totally safe and normal thing to feel. And it doesn't mean you're failing. It just means that that's what the process feels like of fatherhood, especially when you're trying to change. You know, Fred, I don't want to cut you off, but I want to say you're waving your finger at me. So I'm excited. I don't know.
No,
what you're
I was saying
say
that's good. I was just saying that's good.
I want to ask you about your story, meaning like, give me the Fred Odom story. And I'm going to, before you go there, you said something that I think is really important that I kind of, it's not a detour, but just like say something about this and then story. You said, you know, we often want the title of leadership, but we don't want the, say that second part.
The weight of stewardship.
The weight of stewardship. That's those are some bars that will preach all day long. Tell me a little bit more about that. And why I'm asking is because I sense so many men do want the leadership. We all like we're made to excel. You know, most guys that will listen to this podcast are the types of people that are like, I want to grow. I want to know more. I want to excel in what I'm doing. But again, I think what you painted with those, with that phrase very brilliantly is it's not as easy and as linear as we always think. So from your perspective, give me a little bit more on that, the leadership and stewardship piece.
Yeah, man. I mean, I think working in a corporate environment, there's a very natural like, okay, you can see titles of leadership and how you progress and grow and things like that. And man, as I recently like had the opportunity to experience a promotion in my job and like, so got a new title. And if I'm honest, Brooke, like, and I've told my boss this, like, man, on paper, I thought I would be doing kind of similar things. So I didn't think it would feel all that different. Mm. And now a few months in, it feels very different. And I think it aligns with the biblical structure of like leadership and stewardship too, which is like, if you get a greater title, that actually means more people are probably entrusted to you. Mm. And so like you have the weight of more people, more responsibility, like shouldering that. And yeah, man, it's not easy. Mm-mm. And I think you get like the immediate adrenaline spike of like, oh, I got this new thing. But now you have to live in the reality of, oh, like God, you've called me to now carry this and to take the care of this. Like you've entrusted this to me. And it's not all on me, which is another part of fatherhood I'm learning. Like I can't do this by myself. But there is a weight to that that, I don't know, I guess maybe from the outside looking in, we don't always take into consideration. Frankly, Brooke, I think guys can probably look at the platform you have and desire the title and desire the accolades that come with that.
It sucks.
What I've got the opportunity to see is like the behind the scenes struggles and like the preparation and leading the team and like all the other stuff that comes with it that people may not know what they're actually asking for.
Mm. It's a really great perspective. I'm really glad you said that because again, most of the things in the most true thing that you just said, in my opinion, at least my experience, opinion, but through lived experience, is that more leadership just simply means more stewardship because I'm not an owner. You know, I'm not an owner of my wife, of my kids, of an organization, of a title. I'm not an owner of content. I'm a steward of my life and therefore I'm a steward of absolutely everything. Like I don't actually own any of it. Now, I know that like biblically we say that, we know that, but when you get to a spot when you maybe you've climbed some mountains and you start to look down a little bit or you're like, when I was looking up this mountain, it looked very different. And when I'm a little bit higher on the mountain, not even have arrived, that doesn't even ever happen. When I have a different perspective of when I'm looking in a different area, you just start to realize like the whole thing is stewardship. It's stewardship of your life,
man.
Your marriage, like it's a stewardship of a team. It's now you are responsible for making sure people get paid and are loved and cared for and hopefully don't hate the experience they have working with you. You know, it's just like,
and bro, let me build on that real quick. Cause like, bro, I think even what you all said in the last episode, specifically what you called out about your daughter who like leads worship was such an unlock for me that more stewardship might not even be just about you. Like God could have been positioning you in the work you're doing right now for what it's going to set up your daughter to do one day.
Oh, that's a good point. I don't remember saying that. That's good that you're reminding me.
Well, it was really profound, man. That just means it was spirit led.
It has to be. Yep, it's true. It's true. Anyway, keep going. I'm sorry.
Oh, no. It's just that like the stewardship is like what we can tangibly see, like the people around us. But it's also like, oh God, there's a legacy you're probably building that I don't even have the foresight to see. But me taking care of what you've entrusted in me today, like that's what sets the stage for that to happen.
Yes, dude. I couldn't agree more. Thank you for saying that. I just think for anyone in leadership, for anyone wanting to aspire to it, I mean, that's the case. It's like you're faithful with little. I remember that phrase being told to me over and over and I couldn't always relate with it, which is like, hey, if you're faithful over little, he'll make you faithful over much. And I'm always like, just feels like it's mostly little all the time. Like, when's the much? Like, still don't feel like the much has happened. That's how it feels. And I think that's a long process of being entrusted with thing after thing. I think being entrusted with a spouse, with kids, with opportunities in business, like, God is looking for people that are full of integrity and actually want to serve him and want to honor him. I'm also kind of shocked at times at the level of people that you would assume actually really do follow Jesus. But when you either experience their life or look in their life, there's like a level there that, because we're all human, that is just like still really dark. And I think it's such a great reminder in, you know, Second Chronicles, I think it is, like, God's going to and fro looking, you know, throughout the land, looking for those whose mind and hearts are set on him. And that's it. You know, when I think about men like you, Fred, I'm like, oh, God's like looking throughout the world. Like, where's people that really, you know, they don't have it figured out. They have hard stories. They have hard situations. They don't got it perfect, not even close, but their heart and mind, they're set towards me, and they're going to be bent for the remainder of their life to serve and follow me. I think you're doing that. I think that's, and it's not easy, and it doesn't mean, again, perfection, but you're doing that. And I think there's a whole army of people, hopefully even listening right now, that are saying, I want to do that. I want to serve Jesus in my generation. So anyway,
thank you, man.
Yeah. Well, absolutely. I want to hear, give us some of the history of Fred Odom. Like, you know, obviously I'd love to hear some of childhood if you want, go there. And then obviously to present, give me some history. Fathers, we are so excited to let you know of two resources that myself and Justin have been working on. First, Sowing a Hidden Seed, Daily Prayers for Your Child's Spiritual Growth, is available exclusively right now at intentionalparents.org or intentionalfatherhood.org. It is a 31-day guide to help you pray and focus with consistency on your family, your children, helping shape their hearts while God shapes yours. And of course, you've heard about it, Justin's resource, his new book, The Body Teaches the Soul, is available everywhere books are sold. This book is about the 10 essential habits that build a healthy and holy life, habits that strengthen how you lead your home. So we want to just encourage you, if you have not grabbed those resources and those are helpful, please take a moment, get those now, and let's get back to today's episode.
Yeah, man, I'll give you some of the big beats and then feel free to like interrupt, redirect, be like, Fred, sure. That's not at all as I was hoping you would go to. So, bro, jump in whenever you feel compelled. So I started it. I would say if I do childhood, I'll hit on like two of the most significant things that impacted me growing up. One of those was, as I mentioned, my parents' divorce. So that put me in a position where I spent a lot of time back and forth. Like, thankfully, an experience most people don't have who come from that background is like good relationship with mom and dad. Thankfully, I did have that. And underneath it left this sense of like, okay, where do I belong? Now at three, I couldn't ask that. Up to 14, 15, I couldn't ask that. I didn't have the words for it, but that was the lived experience. And then you couple that with like Monday through Friday at my school, it was a predominantly white Christian school. And so I'm usually one of, if not the only person at the table that looks like me. But then on Sundays, I'm at a predominantly black church. And so I'm surrounded by more people who I have this in common, but day-to-day experiences are very different. And so it put me in the spot of saying, I don't actually know where I belong. And like, I didn't have, again, the language for it at that age, but from growing up, I can look back now and see, oh, so much of what I was chasing in pursuit of relationships with women or in athletics or things like that was me searching for this place of belonging. And man, from a faith standpoint, things came to a head when I went to college. I met this guy my freshman year. And I remember, we had this like intramural basketball thing we were doing. And I like offered to pray for the team before we went out to go play. And this guy was a senior and he pulled me aside. He's like, man, I'd love to just get dinner with you and get to know you. So we go out to dinner. We're sitting there. And it was interesting because Brooke, all he wanted to talk about was Jesus. And all I wanted to talk about was how to date a godly girl. And it became very, very clear that like Jesus was his end and Jesus was just a means to an end for me. Like it was like, okay, I go through Jesus to get this thing that I actually want. But I'm listening to him and I'm like, oh, he's found something that I really long for. Again, didn't have the word for it, but it was belonging.
Like, that's what he's found. And I want that. And so, man, that was my first experience of like actually being discipled by somebody. And man, that year absolutely changed my life. Like, man, I believe that's when I became a Christian. Like, when Jesus started to begin sanctifying me and maturing me in him. And man, where I'll go from there. So I met Becca in college. So this is like starting to bring in some of the marriage stuff. So her and I met her freshman year, my sophomore year. And man, it and I remember like the distinct moment meeting her and being like, oh, there's just something different about you. And I didn't have the words for it. Then I didn't know, like, oh shoot, that's gonna be my wife one day. But man, just meeting her, like, she yeah, man, she was just solid. She loved her friends, she loved the Lord. And we had an up and down dating relationship, a lot of stuff that maybe we'll get into in a little bit in the podcast. But man, by God's grace, we've been married for 10 years now. But man, I'll shift over to work stuff because that started to come to fruition in college as well. So I joined this fraternity my junior year. Again, this idea of belonging. Oh, I think I found this group of guys that I belong to. And I remember every year we had new people who wanted to join. We did this round robin where you kind of come around to each fraternity and you hear their sales pitch of like why you should be a part of it. Yep. And for that year, I was tapped to do it for our group. And Brooke, I did it. And man, at the end of it, like, got like a standing ovation from the guys in the room. And man, it was this moment of like,
wow,
oh shoot, like, God, what if part of how you designed me is to like speak and share about things that I love and mean a lot to me? And what I was really inviting those guys into, Brooke, again, like, is this word that I didn't know was so woven in my story, but belonging. Like, I was inviting them into a space where they could find belonging. And man, you fast forward to today, one of my favorite parts about my job is that every year, specifically for Next, I get to tell these speakers we bring in, yo, we've been doing this for 50 years as a company. Like, this is a huge deal for us. This is the theme for this year. This is why we chose you and why you're the perfect person to help us accomplish what we want to accomplish. And Brooke, man, I've just recently, the Lord shown me, like, the reason I love that part of my job so much is because I'm actively giving people a place of belonging. I'm showing them that in this bigger picture, this is where you fit. And so this thing that like Jesus has begun to heal in me and meet in me, I now get to offer to those around me through my work, which is super dope.
I love that. That story is, that's so, I love that connection in so many deep ways. I wanted to kind of go back for a second because I think something that you said that just stuck out to me that is such an important experience. It sounds like very formative in one sense, but also very impactful to you, is you said, you know, throughout the week, you're at a predominantly white school, then you're at a Black church on Sunday, the cultural difference, the, you know, kind of almost like the knee-jerk reaction of differences. And the, like you said, the felt need throughout the week or what the experiences were week over week were different. And my question to you is like, that seems like not nothing. And I'd be curious because the belonging piece, obviously, as the connection, in my mind, I'm going like, oh, you are, I wonder how much you've been given that gift of even that desire because there was so long that you didn't feel like you belonged, right? Or you belonged. So talk to me about that. What was that like? And what were some of the things during that time, or even looking back, that were helpful to you to belong? Was it like, hey, I'm going to just embrace like my friend group at school, or man, I'm going to just fully embrace the my friend group at church? Like, how did you navigate that? What was that? What was that like for you?
Yeah, man, it was both. Like, the answer was yes. It was like when I'm at school, like, man, I can fully engage here and there's aspects that I can pull from that are still true of me that can connect with this group of people. And then when I'm at church, like, there's other aspects I can pull from me that can connect with this group of people. What's interesting, Brooke, is like, so this is another kind of side that gets into this. So my mom growing up grew up in an environment where, like, because she was a Black woman, she wasn't allowed to rent library books. And so she would befriend some of the white individuals in her community who would then go rent library books and like bring them to her. And man, when you grow up in that type of an environment, like, it can be easy to bias towards bitterness. But my mom did the exact opposite. She held on to verses like Nehemiah 8:10, like, the joy of the Lord is my strength. And like, whatever man says about me, that's not going to define me. And man, I'm so grateful for that and the gift that that was for me growing up, that she spoke those things over me. And where it, how do I say this? Where stuff underdeveloped in me was a belief that God wanted to hear about my hard days too. Like what I took from her saying that is, there's never anything wrong. You should never voice any frustrations or any complaints or any anger. And so I didn't have the vocabulary for that. So growing up, it was just like, oh, I just have to be joyful in all these different places. And I never really had a space where I could process like, oh, I'm angry. And I can feel that and that be okay. And man, it wasn't until 4 years ago, I was on a retreat through this organization called Wellspring. And man, the entire premise behind the retreat is like the people would walk away and actually believe that God loves them, which is such a fundamental like thing to like to our Christian faith. Yet I found, at least for me, I had a really clear head knowledge of that, but very low experiential knowledge of that. And so, man, like I went on this retreat and it was the first place I actually processed like anger I felt about my parents' divorce, like the isolation I felt from having to like morph myself to fit in this culture and then in this culture and not ever feeling like I really belonged. Like it was the first time I got to voice that while simultaneously having guys around me who said, man, I just love you for who you are. And like, I think, and Brooke, the purpose of this isn't for me to gas you up, but man, I think one of the reasons I connect with you so much is like, I've felt that from you, like a valuing of like who I am, not just what I look like or what I can bring to the table, which has been such a gift, man. Like more of a gift than you know. Yeah.
Well, that's very kind. I just love you, bro. So it's not actually, you know, I mean, it's not an effort to get to know people, get to know you and care for you. You're a legit, wonderful human. So that's just that. Those are facts. And anybody that gets to know you or even listen to this will go like, yeah, I want to know Fred. And his address specifically, if you want to visit him at his home, is...
Go ahead and fill that in.
Yeah, his number is... no, I mean, but I think... You know, thank you for sharing that and going along that way. Yeah, I mean, that detail that you just said of getting to a point where you're, and I don't always do this perfectly by any means. I guess I want to highlight this for anybody recognizing that we live in a culture right now that it almost breathes this idea of using people, not knowing people. And it's really bizarre, especially in the line of work that we do, but also in some of what you do for sure. There's no doubt that it comes up where it's like, how can I position myself with this person so there's a maybe a connection or another meeting or maybe a potential for that? And you know, it's the world we live in. And if there's anything I'm like even right now actively trying to teach my son who's almost an adult and my kids in general, it's like we do have a loneliness problem, but I think it's bigger. I think we actually have a knowing problem. People don't know how to know other people anymore. And so everyone's lonely because no one knows how to get to know anyone and no one feels known and no one knows how to know. And so it's really weird. Like even actively, I can't remember what the story was exactly, but a situation recently where it was this situation where someone was just talking about their loneliness, but they were very connected. They had a lot of people, even physical community. They weren't even like isolated into their room with their phone, whatever the image that you get with loneliness. They just didn't feel known. And the truth is most people don't know how to ask questions. They don't know how to get to know people. And I think, you know, even to your point, Fred, you do that with other people. You ask good questions. You get to know people. And when people feel known, they don't feel lonely. They feel seen. They feel accepted. And they feel loved. And I think there's that detail that you give people. But if anyone listening, stop trying to use people. Just start getting to know people. And what I've learned is, man, the more you get to know people, the more God uses people in your story to open what doors he wants to open, right?
And bro, and
that's the truth.
It's the truth. And bro, like I think because of the work that you do, you see a lot of the behind the scenes, the off camera stuff. Because of the work that I do, I see a lot of the like backstage stuff. And man, when you're around people who have like an incredible following, a really high leadership, a really high influence, and you see them backstage, man, you have this profound realization that like, oh, you need Jesus too. like you don't have it to like, we're all learning and we all are like, man, trying to grow and develop. And like, you have the same deep desires that I have to feel seen and known and loved and valued. And so if we can then take that knowledge and actually engage with someone and ask the question, but what a gift that is to them.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, a lot of people, not a lot, well, there's a lot. Yeah. I mean, a consistent amount of people, I think, ask that type of a similar question of, hey, I'm wanting to start something. How do I do it? I'm wanting to do this thing. I have this vision for this idea. How do I get into it? And they'll want to have that conversation with myself or others. And I think it's always an interesting detail to scale back and just ask the deeper question of like, is this like a thing that you are envisioning and forcing to happen? Or is this an extension of what you're made to do, want to do? The thing right now, this
bro,
hits
can I
our
tell
world.
You a story on that, Brooke?
Please, yeah,
can
please.
I, can
please.
I jump, man? So do we, it. So our annual conference at Chick-fil-A, we call it Next. And before I was working on the team that helped produce it, I was attending it like all of our operators staff do. And man, I remember sitting in the audience at one point, and there was this guy who came out on the stage. His name was Ryan Leake. Maybe some of the listeners like are familiar with him, know who he is. And
legend.
Man, that was the first time for me I had ever seen somebody on a stage like that who looked like me and had like the kind of the functional titles of things I would hope one day of like, he was a teaching pastor, but also worked in business and like had written books. And like, it was like, oh man. And like, oh God, like, I think there's actually something in me that came alive seeing that. And I had a few friends in the audience text me simultaneously, like, yo, you kind of reminds me of you. Like, I could see you doing something like
that. That's the first thing I told you when I met you. That's the first thing I
said. But Brooke, here's the danger of it is, man, and maybe this gets into some of the fatherhood stuff. I took that moment and said, okay, God, now it's on me to go create it. Like now it's on me to start to figure out, okay, how do I go do this? And how do I maneuver this? And do I need to start up a website? Do I need to do all this stuff? And man, what God has shown me over this past year and a half is like a lot of that has been laid down. And in many ways, like my role has put me even more behind the scenes in my company that like, man, he sees me when other people don't. Mm-hmm. And like, he provides the opportunities in ways that you could never imagine. And bro, there has been a like,
preach.
For someone who, I speak for myself, who like enjoys getting to communicate and share and formulate ideas, the gift that it has been for me to lay that down in service of helping somebody else shine on that platform has like, I mean, I had a friend one time who told me, God cares more about who you're becoming than what you're achieving. And man, who I'm becoming because of that work is far more impactful, far more impactful.
Yes. Yeah, dude, could not agree more. Couldn't agree. And I think you just said it. You said the secret, like a lot of, what is the secret? What Fred just said, just reverse a minute and a half and listen to that again. I mean, greatness in the kingdom of God isn't the stage. It isn't the moment. It's the life that leads to the opportunity to serve others in that venue or that space. It isn't, you know, if you're not serving, right now, you're not going to ever want to serve other people. If you have a platform of any sort, because it's all going to be about you no matter what the thing is. It's about how you can get what you want and take. But man, the giving posture of what you just said, the character. I mean, how many people do we know that just burn out because they have the charisma to get on a stage, but their character can't hold them up?
And man, what I found on the fatherhood side of it is like, that's probably what God uses the most to form character. I'm sure, man, you can speak to it from like the stage of life you're in. The stage I'm in with my kids is like bedtimes are still a process. Like I'm still wiping.
It will be for a while.
And changing poop and all. Like it's like a like yeah, man. It's
gritty.
A humbling thing. It's gritty. It's messy and literally and figuratively, it's messy.
Yeah.
And man, it's and Brooke, I'll tell you, most people who know me would probably never think I struggle with anger. And I don't think I would have thought I struggled with anger until I became a dad. Like, until I started putting kids to bed, yeah. I didn't realize I struggled with anger. And what's really underneath that is I want to feel like I'm in control. And when one of my daughters bucks against the bedtime routine that's established for me to finally have some time to myself or time for me and Becca, and they buck against that, I feel an anger because I'm not in control. And what's underneath the control is like, God, I don't actually trust that you're giving me what I need through these girls and through my current life. I think what's going to give me what I need is like on the other side of like getting them down, getting some freedom. And it's just not true.
Dude. That is so, so good. The control piece, I find when my kids aren't regulated, that dysregulates me and I don't like the chaos, right?
I didn't even know dysregulated was a word until I had kids. And I was like, oh, that's what's happening to me right now. And my wife's an occupational therapist, so she had a lot of that language coming into marriage. And I was like, boy, this is very different.
Your face was amazing. Like, well, I did not expect. I thought I was pretty good. And you are pretty good. It's that it's the invitation to the deeper forming. Like, we're all great when we have no pressure. Like, when I'm by myself, pretty good, dude. I'll be honest. I'm a great human. You put humans in the mix, that's when all this stuff comes out for me. And that's the truth for most people. But let me ask you a question, man.
Again, I see this very actively in like the current season of fatherhood I'm in, which is very, very young kids. Does it get easier as they get older? Is it like, no, it's still just as hard. It's just a different hard, like cast vision for guys who are in my stage of life.
You're talking about the control piece?
The control piece, the like, man, I get home and it feels like I'm just in active service. Like that.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, our situation is a little unique in the sense that we have four kids, so quantity is just a one dynamic to note. Like, the more kids you have, when people say, just have one more, it's just one more. No, it's not. It's a whole other human. It's a whole other soul. And I'm not going to say that doesn't mean you shouldn't have more kids. It just means, like, don't sell people on more kids on the idea that it's not that big of a thing. It's a huge thing every time. Because that kid will have their own soul and life and development and formation. And it's huge. That said, I'm glad we have four kids. So we have quantity. One of our little girls has special needs. That's another dynamic. And then our youngest two are 10 and 8. Now that's a whole different stage than you're at, Fred, right? Like, my youngest are older than your oldest right now.
Yeah.
But let me just give you an example. Last night I walked into the door. Most of the time now, because my son's 17, he has a girlfriend, very sweet. My daughter's very social. There's other people hanging at our house because we've opened our home to be like, hey, we want to be the house that always basically pretty much outside of, you know, sickness or something else, says yes to their friends being over because it's something that we value. And it's a lot, you know, strategically, you can pour into your kids and know who they're hanging out with. So we make it available, which means stuff breaks and there's an excessive amount of food around. It's just what it is. And we value it. But I walk in the door and there's stuff everywhere because the kids were playing something. Duke and his girlfriend were talking in the kitchen and Scarlett and her friend were there and they're all having a joke. Elizabeth's making dinner. Birdie's outside with a friend. Sloane's laying on the couch and there's stuff everywhere. And so my job is to walk in and greet everybody. So everyone gets a hug and a kiss as is appropriate. And even my son, I give him one big wet one on the cheek. And he's like,
Dad. I'm sure he loves that.
Oh, he loves
it. In
like,
front
bro.
Of his girlfriend.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sure that's great.
Oh, dude, he loves it. We have that kind of relationship. He just laughs. He's like, give it to me. I'm like, all right. Anyway, he's so funny. Anyway, then, you know, we move around and I just immediately start picking stuff up. Now, it's not because I'm so noble. It's because I know that my wife has been wanting to pick that stuff up and that the kids have been playing and I don't ask questions. I start asking questions about the day, but I start doing that as I'm wiping the counters down and I'm picking the stuff up. And it's not even something that like I'm noting that is so noble to do. It's just like you walk in and you just meet whatever need is there, not because it's so noble, but because I think it's what's necessary for the family. So to answer your question, I think it looks different. I don't, you know, the only poop and pee that I mess with anymore would be that of a dog. And I don't mess with it because it's like, kids, that's your dog. And if that dog has a problem, it's your problem. So, you know, I'm not in that gritty of a stage.
We share our love of our dogs together as well. We really value our dogs. Justin bought
two dogs at the same time. He texted me the other day complaining. I was like, bro, this is your bed. You get to sleep in it. Anyway, so they specifically are older. Yes. But like a big fat, for instance, would be like, my kids went to bed pretty easy last night, but my son needed to process some stuff and talk through some stuff. And these things are not like things that are minor anymore. These are like major life principle wisdom topics that need like sharpness of mind. And so you're accurate to say, yes, it shifts. It's different. And I think the heart of service for your family, especially, is that of what is necessary as a father. Like, I don't think you get the option to just check out of that. What you do will look different. But if you keep that posture of heart, I think that's what keeps relationships strong and healthy. You know, if I start coming in to work or coming home and going, I've had a hard day. I am owed, as the person who has provided the day, I am owed emotional disconnection and no responsibility of any task. Well, all I'm doing is ruining my own future by not having close relationships with those around me. Now, that doesn't mean you're not like valid, like a break is valid. Hey, I need 20 minutes, or hey, I need to work out. Like, figure out your thing. But walking in and thinking that you're owed something is always a recipe for pain. And it does change, but it doesn't go away. And I don't think it should. I don't think that's the role of being a father. I think it's supposed to be. It's a part of the experience.
Well, Brooke, I think the gold that you just gave us is, and I think maybe you had posted about this on Instagram at some point recently, was like, people say I'll die for my family, but will you blank for your family? And what you just filled in the blank with is like, will you wipe the counter for your family?
Yeah.
Like, will you go out and push your kids on the swing after you're tired from a long day of work for your family? And they can swing themselves too, which is a whole other thing. But like, it brings this lofty, like, yeah, I'll die for you, down to like, oh, that dying for you actually looks like just dying to myself daily.
Dude,
like, that's actually what it looks like.
Yes. Dude, I love how you just connected that. Yeah, because that is what the invitation of fatherhood, but marriage is too, you know? And because marriage is pretty easy. I don't know about your situation, Fred. Mine is super easy.
Oh, it's a breeze. We never. Hey.
I mean, I'm glad our wives won't listen to this. And
nope.
Also, the fact that our wives are the most unimpressed with us is very good for us. I want to say this, by the way. Your face just got... Go to YouTube and watch Fred's face on that statement. That was amazing. You're like, gee. And that is actually... You know, and that's no shade on Becca, who I know, who I got to meet at the motherhood retreat. So sweet to finally meet her in person. But that's actually a gift to you. Like, the fact that your wife can see all the good and be that regulator of like, hey, I can be impressed and proud of you where you're doing great. But also like, nobody's batting 1,000 all the time. Like, there's having a spouse at times that is like not overly impressed is actually, for certain personalities, really good.
Oh, and, bro. You know, yeah, because it can, like, given my wiring background, Enneagram number of being a 3, like, achievement is so hardwired in me, and that's not the thing my wife values most from me. Mm. And man, that, like, that's actually, it can be frustrating at times because it can feel like a code that I can't unlock. Mm-hmm. But in my healthiest state, it's like, oh God, what a gift. That like my wife actually just wants me.
Mm-hmm. Not what you can get her. Yeah. Well, because you also do need that. We all need that. Like, obviously, we need a certain level of affirmation, which I no doubt know that your wife gives you, my wife gives me. But yeah, being overly like impressed or like disconnected from reality with who you are is that's not always helpful. But on the, you know, I'm, so many angles we could go here, but when it comes to things like, I'm just thinking, you know, you with what you do you're doing a lot of beautiful things in the world. I love the lane that you're in of helping people, communicating, using words to help people. Man, what a gift. You're doing that right now, just even by processing how this experience of just living right now in this moment is going. I would love to know just briefly, what are some of the life things, and this can be as broad or as specific as you want, but what is Fred Odom learning right now? What's a little piece of gold? I didn't prep you on this at all, but like something that's just been like, hey, this has hit me recently. And this is something I'm chewing on that's been super, super helpful.
Yeah, give man. Hope. Yeah, man. So every year, usually in November, I'll start praying through like, God, what's a word or a theme or something you have for me for the year to come? And this past November, it was the word devotion. And so in my mind, I'm like, boy, bet I'm about to be reading about David and Samuel and Joseph and like these dudes who were dialed in. And man,
I just love where it's going. Keep going.
And Brooke, like, it was in January. So my wife and our family, we go to Passion City Church in Atlanta, and Pastor Ben Stewart was speaking that Sunday. And as he was sharing, and it was like a New Year's timed message, but man, as I was sitting there, it was this moment of like, oh shoot, God, I thought this year was going to be about my devotion to you, but this year is actually much more about your devotion to me. And man, what God has had me in over the past 6 months is actually starting to believe like I am a beloved son. Because so much of my desire for belonging and achievement stems from a like, God, am I really seen as enough? Like, am I really okay? And so him meeting me in that. And then, man, someone said a prayer for me recently that they said the statement, Fred, I pray that in this next season, your surrender would be greater than your sacrifice. And man, I processed some of that with you. And I think if I had to sum it up, Brooke, God's teaching me to surrender to his love for me. And I think from that posture of surrender, I'll actually be able to love my wife and my girls in the way that I long to. But if I just go white knuckling it towards them, I'm going to be exhausted. They're going to feel my exhaustion, and there's going to be zero joy in it.
Dude, that is so incredibly helpful. That your surrender would be greater than your sacrifice. Yes. For all of us, Lord. Yes. What you're saying, different personalities are going to hear what you just said differently. But the thing that I think is a through line, no matter what personality type you are, is that the greatest thing for most men that I experience myself, especially and included, is surrendering, whether that's control, it's the dream, it's the vision of what you thought you were, your family was going to be, the kind of marriage you were going to have, kind of kids you were going to have, how easy you were going to be able to handle that. I mean, like the word surrender applies to, every area. The career path you're on versus what you expected, what you're doing right now versus what you feel like you're called to do. Like that position of surrender isn't of giving up. It's actually a place where strength comes, where peace comes, where help comes. And so I think surrender has like this bad rap a lot of the time. It's like, no, surrender's like surrender.
And where we actually start to like, to really trust God. Because like a lot of my Christian life has been like, I'm actually trusting in myself to like solve this, come through for myself, create this opportunity. Like that situation where I felt like I feel connected to what Ryan Leake just said. I'm going to go start doing some stuff as opposed to like, oh God, that was like a special moment. What do you want to do with this? Like, can I trust that like your pace is the right pace and I'm not behind?
Yeah. Oh yeah, dude, there you go. Yeah. That you're not behind. That's a lie of the enemy that he uses to stop many men. Like, hey dude, you haven't done it yet. Or you put yourself on someone else's timeline, who's just a completely different human with a whole different set of backgrounds and circumstances. And we compare in an unfair way to other people when they have things or situations or opportunities that we never had. And yet we still hold ourselves to that standard. It's like, be kind, you know, it's hard to do that.
And man, there's also like,
so, yeah, oh, say, ahead, say we're gonna say that. No, I have a question, but I wanted you to finish what you're gonna say.
Yeah, man, I've also like, I think God's been showing me on the fatherhood stuff specifically, man, it really is in the little things we do that our kids start to catch it. So like every weekday morning when I'm driving into work and I have like Charlie and Chapel, our two oldest, in the car with me, we call Becca, she's home with Chloe, and we just like say a family prayer together. But like the girls have started to argue over like who can pray that day. And it's like, oh, bet, like they want to pray. They know what prayer is. Or like every Monday we have like family core value time where we have like four core values as a family. And we just pick one randomly and we're like, all right, girls, like, what do you think it means to be intentional? Or how could we have courage today? Or what does it mean to be authentic? And it's like most times, I don't know if they're fully catching it, but every now and then Charlie will be like, hey, dad, there was this girl who was sitting by herself at the lunch table today. And I like went to sit with her. I was like, Charlie, that was intentional. Like you're like, you're living out the stuff that we want God to pass through you and put in you. And so, but man, it's Brooke, it's messy. It doesn't always work, but it like, it's been a reminder to me that, man, it doesn't take the grand gestures. Like it's faithfulness and just trying to show
that,
up each day.
Yes. That daily stuff. I mean, yeah, you're saying it like as a couple years down the road, it is amazing to me how little things that we thought that we just like, gosh, we failed in this area, or we just put little effort compared to what we thought we needed to move the needle. And it's been amazing to see how just very small things consistently have major impact over time. And those little moments of core values, like, you know, that's why you're doing it. You know, it's impactful, but what's bizarre is you'll start to see in years, a couple years, even from now, how they start to embrace it and use it in their own framework of thinking. And even, you know, your voice as a father becomes the voice of the father in their head. That is why it's so important to think about how you talk to your kids because they're going to be going back and forth. Like when they're an adult, that's going to be what shapes how they hear God. And that's both should be daunting and terrifying to all of us. And it should also be just a reminder that, hey, God can cover your worst moments, and he does. And he is all about the attempts. He loves our attempts. He's not asking for perfection. He's just saying, will you attempt godliness? I'll help you. You know what I mean?
Yeah, man.
He loves our attempts. And so you're doing that, and that's beautiful. I mean, that's what you just said is doing more than most by a long shot. And having those little moments throughout the week to pick even a word, you're teaching your kids that. And dude, anyone listening, just take that idea and begin to do that. We did copyright intentional, so you can't use it anymore. So you have to pick a different word for your
that's
family.
Fair, yeah, we need a different core value there. No, or maybe it was just providential. It was like God already knew this was happening.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Let me just ask you one more question as we kind of end our time. So, you know, it was actually a year ago, Father's Day, because we're in June right now. When we launched Intentional Fatherhood, which is a bizarre thing to think. It feels much longer than that. But I know that it, you know, you had told me in a different way, one or another, that it stirred some stuff in your heart. And it has been cool to see how you have taken what is in your hand to do and in your kind of stirring of, you know, in your calling to fatherhood and have just brought it into your workplace. And I love that story. And I just would love for you to even take a second to, you know, highlight what you're doing. And the reason I'm wanting to highlight that is because I want to hopefully for people to see how simple it is to start to bring impact through your life to wherever God has placed you right now. And I want to highlight that because I think you've done a great job of just setting a table, especially in Chick-fil-A in that ecosystem, for people to grow and to be helped in certain ways. So give like the you know, however long you want on that particular end, because I think it's really helpful to a lot of people.
Yeah, bro. Thank you for teeing that up. And man, it'll also be an opportunity to get to honor you because what I'm doing at Chick-fil-A. No, I'm going to. You're going to receive it because this is recorded and you can't argue with it. So I'm going to honor you.
It's real friendship stuff.
Yeah. Hey, bro, did you know you're an author?
Stop it. Shut up. That's a deeper... I'm going
to
get you.
All right, I'll keep going.
That's a backstory.
it wouldn't exist without like your prompting it and how the Lord used you because, man, you were coming in town it was probably, I guess, March of this year. You were going to be in Atlanta for some other stuff. And we were going to get lunch in my office. And man, you just kind of threw out the idea like, hey, would there be some other guys you'd want to like invite in and us just talk about manhood and fatherhood and things like that? And at first I was like, I don't know, maybe. One kind of went back and forth and I was like, you know what? Why not? So I just like blasted an email group out to some guys that I know at the company who are in the same stage of life processing similar things. And man, we had like a very low resolution lunchtime. Me and you sat up on a stage. We moderated a conversation. Like 30 guys showed up. They like asked some questions back and forth. And man, I didn't have a vision for it when you and I did that. I legit thought it was going to be just a one and done. But as I started to like pray and process it more, and there was this moment at the very end where a guy who was in the room, he said, how do I build intentional friendships with other men?
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, God, I think I know people who could help with that. And so there's like three guys at our company who are really respected leaders, but I know that they've had this 25-year friendship. And so I reached out to them and I was like, hey, we just kind of started this thing. Like, I was going to call it intentional men, but Brooke told me I can't use intentional. So I'm calling it integrated men. And so we're having this thing.
I didn't say that.
And so like, would y'all come and just like talk about your friendship? What's like, how it's been a blessing to you? What's been hard about it? How have you fought against comparison? How do you build male friendship? Mm-hmm. And so we just had that last week and like probably 40 guys showed up to that. And man, I've already started to think about like, oh God, I think this next thing in September could be this. And maybe there's an end of year thing that gets to like, could this become a quarterly gathering? That's, man, really just trying to take what you and Justin tee up for us in intentional fatherhood and like, man, bring it down to like boots on the ground. I'm in community with these men at our office. How can we start to live this out together?
Yes. Dude, I want to be so honest. I was not bringing it up to have any sort of like intentional fatherhood pat on the back, although I appreciate it. It is actually to highlight the initiative that you have. And I think that, you know, I think I love seeing this army of men kind of arise, whether that's through voice memos or emails or, you know, social media communication or DMs, like this army of men being like, I want to continue to grow in my faith with the people around me in my community and all the different ways that it looks. And I just want to say, man, I wanted to highlight what you have been pouring into, because I think it's just a yet another example of like what it can look like. You know, for you, it was like, hey, this is pretty simple. I got these connections with these friends and let's just sit in a room and have an excuse to talk about the deeper things. And people wanted to come. And then, you know, again and again and again, they want to come. And so I think it's a cool example of the initiative. It doesn't take much. You said you blasted an email. It doesn't take much to start creating that community. And I want to say that to give anybody hope that, you know, take it from Fred's vantage point, it's not much more than initiative. You know, most leadership looks like initiative. It doesn't look like having all the answers. You're not going to be able to have those. You're not going to solve all the problems because you don't know everything. But it's your job to initiate. And that's what you did. And so it's just to say, great job, Fred, for doing that. But it's creating a culture within a very strong culture. I mean, anybody that understands Chick-fil-A as a culture, what I loved about it was like the identity and the culture piece. You feel it in the space. And
yeah, man.
Even with the Cathy family, it's an extension of them and getting to know them. It's like, man, that is who they are. But even for you to say, let's take that beautiful gift that has been already, that table that's been set, and let's even take it to another level you know, you wouldn't be able to even do that if that foundation wasn't set, which is beautiful. But then to have the kind of atmosphere within your work, which again, I know that's not everyone's situation, but that would honor that and be like, yeah, take this space, like get people together, go deeper. It's a huge gift. And so
it's a blessing, super grateful, like super, super grateful.
So yeah, well, just note this, if you're listening to this and you work at Chick-fil-A or Chick-fil-A corporate, check out Fred Odom and the gatherings he's putting on because they're fun.
Nope. Now I actually got to put more on. So thanks for that, bro. If I thought I was done, I guess I'm not done anymore.
Yeah. No, I don't, you know, I mean, I don't think there's ever going to be a moment where people don't need to be with other people and being honest about the pains and the blessings of life and working through those things together in community. That's never going away. And so creating spaces for that to happen is what you're doing. And again, you don't have to have all the answers. You don't have to have the content. If anyone's listening, like, how do I do this? Like, send an email, start with that, you know, send an email and get some conversations going, and you'll be surprised how many people go, me too. Like, I feel that too. And I'd love to talk about that. And so, Fred, it has been a gift just having a fun conversation with you as a friend, but also, you know, somebody who's in it. And I just respect so much of your life, what you're doing, respect how you're living it, honest about, you know, the moments of pain and weakness, which is very important to note that we all have that. But man, you're doing a wonderful job. Yeah. And thanks for just jumping into this conversation today of, you know, what fatherhood in the trenches really does feel like as we're trying to both navigate Jesus and marriage and kids and business and hopes and dreams, like all of it mixed. Thanks for just giving us a window into what it's like, because man, that you named it really well. That is exactly what I think most of us feel, is what you're living.
Brooke, so, man, if I can just like, if I can have the final word on your podcast that you've invited me on, would just be, truly a heartfelt thank you to you and Justin. Like, as someone who is a frequent listener of what you all put out, man, I think part of why this has like blown up in a good way over the past year, like even more than you and Justin could have imagined, is because like God has positioned you all to speak to a felt need that so many men had and didn't have the words to express. And like you all are expressing that. And man, I just pray that like the Lord continues to use it and bless you all and cover you all, because man, you're doing a good work. And Brooke, specifically to you, bro, like your friendship means more to me than you know. Man, I'm so grateful for you. I love you, man. I appreciate you. And you're an author. So just let that sink in.
Fred's freaking just keeps going on inside jokes. I'm not even going to explain the why behind that. Thank you, Fred. I love you and respect you deeply as well. And I'm not even going to mention what you just said. But here's the deal. Come out to everyone listening. Come hang out with us in Austin. Fred's going to be there. He doesn't know it yet, but he's going to be there.
Becca, Hold on.
Becca, can Fred come? Please let me know. I would love for Fred to come if you're listening to this. If you've listened this far, Becca, please, would you think about letting Fred come? Because we need him there.
Give the people the dates, Brooke.
November 12th through 14th. They're coming. Yeah, there you go. Thank you. November 12th through 14th, Austin, Texas. Come out. Say hi to Fred and I and Justin. We'll all be there. But dude, thank you again for your time. Enjoy. You're on East Coast time, so you got to go finish your day. But dude, bless you. And thanks for the combo.
Bro, love you, man. Talk soon.